Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast, the industry's first and longest running podcast, now in our 16th year. I'm Roger Gross, the publisher of GGB, and this week we sit down with John Pappas, the founder and CEO of Corridor Consulting and the former executive director for the Poker Players Alliance, on how the spread of iGaming will continue in the U.S. The GGB podcast is brought to you by IGT's Peak family of cabinets, performance-driven and player-tested across the board. Find out why operators bank on the power of the Peak at igt.com/peak. For more than a decade, John Pappas was the face of legalized online poker in the United States as he led the Poker Players Alliance during a period of the introduction of legal online gaming in the U.S. and a crackdown on sites like Full Tilt and PokerStars following the passage of the Unlawful Internet Gaming Enforcement Act in 2006. His positive message eventually accounted for 4 million members of the Poker Players Alliance who help lobby states to legalize online gaming and poker. Today, he's also helping to promote Idea Growth, an organization founded by attorney Jeff Ifrah to advocate legal online gaming. He spoke with me at G2E in October. Welcome to the Global Gaming Business Podcast. Our guest today is John Pappas. He's a state advocacy director for IDEA, the online gaming publication information service. He's in partnership with Jeff Ifrah. So, John, thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having us. We're happy to be here.
Yeah, John, it's really an honor to have you here. I mean, you've been involved in online gaming for much of your career, I imagine.
Yeah, well, before it was cool.
Right, exactly.
Yeah,
right,
so
right.
I've been involved in the industry since UGIA essentially passed in 2006,
sure.
I was working on federal issues related to the gaming industry. So I got pulled into the industry back then, and then spent 10 years as head of the Poker Players Alliance,
right,
working on mostly internet poker legislation, as well as some other state advocacy issues related to poker. And then really spent the last, since post-PASPA,
right.
The market, as you know, has just exploded,
sure, right.
and sports betting has proven to be kind of the toe in the water that many states are feeling comfortable when it comes to online gaming, and
it's
probably going to lead to more things down the road.
Right, great. So let's go back to the beginning when you started with Poker Player Alliance, and even before that, there was a lot of opposition to it, the standard opposition you find to anti-gambling folks, but there was even opposition from the land-based casino industry, and it was pretty vociferous in those days.
Without question, yeah. It's funny, I mean, to see how the industry has evolved,
right,
if you will, since
right,
then.
180,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I remember being in meetings early on, mm-hmm. and people just saying, never going to happen.
Right.
We don't want this.
Sure.
Not going to happen. We don't want it. And then I think people kind of woke up to the idea that, well, this internet thing isn't really just going away.
Yeah.
And there's still holdouts, right? I mean,
sure.
There's still holdouts.
Well, we see it here in Nevada.
Yeah, for sure. Nevada is slow to progress when it comes to digital anything,
right,
because of the just the reluctance of some to kind of understand and embrace this new wave of gaming, this new wave of consumer interaction.
Sure.
But it's a reality. But yeah, so going back to 2006, mm-hmm. I mean, we were standing alone
right.
in a room being laughed at by most people.
Yeah, right.
And now I think everyone's kind of standing together now and trying to figure it out.
When did you start to see kind of the shift happen?
You know, I'll say the people who were really out on front on this were mm-hmm. Caesars.
Right.
I felt Caesars and then MGM mm-hmm. Were like when they kind of recognized, and I think Caesars really what brought them into it was the WSOP.
Right. Sure.
They had that very valuable brand. Mm-hmm. Poker was what everybody was talking about in the mid late 2000s into the early 2000s, and obviously Black Friday hit
right.
and changed the whole landscape for poker. But I think Caesars recognizing that they had this valuable asset with the World Series of Poker and that there were so many people playing online poker, how could they monetize that?
Right.
And that's really, why we have online poker available here in Nevada is because companies like Caesars were at the forefront.
Well, they're the only ones online here in Nevada, unfortunately. Yes. No, there have been a couple of other companies that have tried. I know South Point had a site up for a while, and
Stations
who had the ultimate poker thing. Yep. But Caesars is a survivor. But I think there's not a lot of people in Nevada to begin with, so really.
Poker is a very difficult product, right, mm-hmm. on a state-by-state basis.
Right.
If you have mass pooled liquidity amongst multiple states, then it becomes a lot more compelling. Very difficult to run a successful poker business from an operator standpoint and from a player standpoint. When one beautiful thing about playing on, you know, Phil Tilt Poker or Poker Stars in, you know, 2009 was that I went on the site, there were 20,000 people there.
Right.
You know, if I wanted to play a $2 sit and go or a $1,000, you know, game, I could do that.
Right.
I'd find full tables.
Sure.
And it's hard to do that when you've got a population of 2 million people.
Right. Now they've reached deals with New Jersey and Delaware, I believe, to share liquidity. But has that worked out at all?
Yeah, it has. Yeah. It has. It's definitely improved. I think where you're going to see the big difference is going to be when a state like Michigan and Pennsylvania join, because they both have regulated in poker. And those markets on their own, Michigan's actually doing quite well from a poker standpoint.
Yep.
And they've got, I think there's three operators in Michigan right now offering poker, and I think at least that many in Pennsylvania. So I think once you have some of these bigger states getting into that shared liquidity pool, then we're starting real progress.
There. Okay. So I guess the last holdout against online gaming was, of course, Sheldon Adelson. And
we're in his building.
We're in his building, for sure. I find it a little ironic in the last conference call when Rob Goldstein said they're interested in getting into it now. But, of course, he doesn't want to be late to the train there, right?
Right. Well, I think progress always wins
in
the end. And it's funny. I was sharing this story with some the other day. I actually met Sheldon Adelson for the first time at the Cut Steakhouse right here in this building, and we had dinner together.
Yeah,
and we were talking to him about online gaming and how the opportunity there. And it was really at that time it was really online poker, and he seemed to understand it, but I just don't think he saw the value in it. Right? And I think that has now changed. You know, obviously the value of online gaming is beyond just the poker vertical, but now when you come to all sorts of casino games and sports betting, if you're not doing it, you're really going to be left behind.
Right.
Like, I mean, I don't think there's any company down the G2E floor right now that's not talking about digital somewhere.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, you know, I interviewed Sheldon at G2E here.
I remember
in
I was there. Right? I remember that very well.
I have 2,000 people in the room, and he got mad at me when I brought online gaming up. You know, you're one of those guys, you know, and I just wanted to play devil's advocate. And,
sure. Well, yeah, you definitely got a rise out of him. I remember that very well.
And his people were very happy. They wanted people to see that he was opposed to it, not really on an intellectual basis, but on an emotional basis.
Yeah,
And I could understand that. And when you saw how concerned he was about children and things like that, even though we understand that there's a lot of protections against that, I think just to see him get emotional about it, I think was good for him and the company as well.
Right. No, I don't ever question his motives. I think they were genuine.
Yeah, no question.
I don't agree with his position, but I think he was certainly was motivated from a good place. I think all of those kind of, there's this mystification that if it's online, it's completely anonymous, right?
Right.
But that's, the regulated gaming has changed the dynamic of the online space for all e-commerce, right? Because of geolocation, because of KYC, the data that you have to understand who a person is, what they're betting, how much they're betting, is all of that data is available when, you never would have that in a brick and mortar
store. Sure, no question. So obviously the you were on the Poker Players Alliance. Were you when the passport was repealed, or were you passed out of that?
No, I left the organization at that time right before probably in the spring, and then Jeff and a few smart people saw, hey, we've got this growing industry in the U.S. Mm-hmm. It's going to get bigger.
Right.
We need to have a unified voice. We need to have a way for these companies to get together and speak to lawmakers, mm-hmm. speak to regulators, and understand like what is iGaming,
right?
You
sure.
know, so you have the casinos who have very entrenched interests in every state where mm-hmm. they have a casino, and that's great.
Right.
But you know, when you have the operators themselves, the ones that are providing the platforms for these land-based casinos, they also have to have a voice.
Right.
And so that's why IDEA was born. And you know, started with an idea from Jeff and a few others in the mm-hmm. industry, and it's grown now to 30 plus members. Everything from you know, brand name operators that
right.
people know, like FanDuel and DraftKings, mm-hmm. to the payments processors, geolocation companies, KYC, data centers. They're all kind of part of this IDEA ecosystem, and mm-hmm. so they run the gamut of what is the industry, and it's a real powerful tool to
yeah,
be able
sure.
to go into a lawmaker's office or a regulator's office and say, this is, iGaming is a new thing,
mm-hmm.
it's maybe a scary thing, but we can answer all the questions from, you know, the moment you decide you want to open an account to
right.
pulling your money off the account. We can take you through the steps of how it works and how it can be regulated.
Okay. So you compile best practices and things like that?
We do,
as
we
well?
Do, yeah, for sure. We have best practices, particularly on responsible gaming
mm-hmm.
side,
right.
Advertising.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a huge issue.
Big issue. Right?
I've just in my couple days here talking with a number of regulators,
mm-hmm.
All of them have said, and this is particularly on sports betting, the amount of advertising is something we've been taken aback by.
Right, yeah.
And we're going to have to figure it out. If the industry doesn't figure it out, we're going to have to figure something out.
Yeah, no question about it. I mean, we've already seen that the backlash in Europe now, where, you know, the advertising bans are spreading across Europe like wildfire, and we should have seen this happen with DFS. You know, remember when DFS came out?
Sure.
I mean, they just blanketed the NFL shows with DFS ads, and there was a backlash against them. So I don't understand why we can't learn our lesson quicker than that.
Yeah, you know, and you certainly don't. I think industry being able to take a step forward and do things that curb it, because I think, as you mentioned, what happened in Europe is that, you know, when you have government come in
right.
and put down the mandate,
sure.
it should be far worse
mm-hmm.
than
yeah.
if industry figures out what should we do.
Sure. And you certainly don't want the federal government involved. I mean, state governments are bad enough.
And, you know, the federal government, while thankfully have kind of had a laissez-faire approach
mm-hmm.
to iGaming and sports betting, you know, if there is a headline for them to get,
right.
they'll pull people up to Congress and have a hearing just to talk about things.
Yeah, so. For sure, no question about that. So, the Peak family of top performing cabinets by IGT are a culmination of years of research and development. A passion leveraging both internal expertise and customer feedback. The results are a series of astounding cabinets that command attention with sleek modern features, ergonomically perfected curves, and bold design. Every aspect of the Peak cabinets have been scrutinized to ensure a comfortable gaming experience, resulting in exceptional performance you can bank on. Learn more at igt.com/peak. Now back to our podcast. Obviously, PASPA has gotten people used to betting online,
mm-hmm.
you know, with mobile devices. Certainly, I haven't been to a sports book to make a bet for about 3 years now here in Nevada. So people are used to doing that. So is this going to be the introduction to iGaming? Obviously, we've seen it in Michigan where they legalized sports betting and iGaming at the same time. Pennsylvania was
same
one
thing.
After another.
Yep.
Now that there's all these states that are legalized sports betting, are they going to start looking at iGaming now?
They are. They're already. We're as part of our organizational,
mm-hmm.
you know, effort is to go into many of these states where they have successful online sports betting,
sure.
and they say, well, the next evolution of this is casino games online. We recognize that we're not going in alone. We're not coming in as, you know, the online guys saying
right.
that you should do this, but your casino industry wants it as well. So, you know, states like Michigan and Pennsylvania, New Jersey. We're smart.
Right.
We did it all together, right?
Sure. Right.
Instead of piecing it out. So it's going to take, it's an education process.
Sure.
You know, I wish I could tell you that, all those states that so quickly passed sports betting are going
right.
to do just as quickly to do
mm-hmm.
iGaming. Probably not. It's
right.
going to take a couple legislative sessions for people to understand the issues,
mm-hmm.
there's a lot more complex stakeholders when you talk about land-based casinos, right, and tribals,
mm-hmm, yeah,
and tribes. So it's going to be a development in progress, that's right, for sure.
So I guess the first thing you want to teach them is they get a lot more tax revenue from iGaming than they get from sports.
Absolutely. I mean, it's almost threefold. Mm-hmm. We look at a state like Michigan, I think, right, just last month alone, sports betting produced something like $4 million in tax revenue. That's nice. Mm-hmm. iGaming was like $22
million. Right. Yeah.
So exactly, right, in just 1 month alone,
yeah,
from the tax revenue.
Right. The other thing I've noticed is there's not a lot of diversity in the iGaming side of this. Like, you know, when you look at the casino that DraftKings and FanDuel puts up, I mean, they're pretty generic. You know, do you think there's going to be a lot of movement in the technology for iGaming some of these sites are going to have really interesting developments that they'll have a proprietary interest in?
Yeah, I think so. I think everyone's moving towards this idea of owning their own tech.
Right.
I mean, that's where we're seeing all the industry evolving, right, to from a mergers and acquisition standpoint. How, mm-hmm, do people kind of own their tech? DraftKings is a great example with purchasing now, or in the process of purchasing Golden Nugget,
right,
which has a very, mm-hmm, very, like, very successful online gaming brand, right, and operational experience. And so they'll be bringing that, and then there's the rumors about potentially purchasing Entain. And,
right.
So that'll all be, I think people are seeing that. And, you know, it's funny, when we talk to lawmakers, they're actually kind of surprised. They're like, wait, so the sports book guys want to do casino gambling? Right. I'm like, well, yes. I mean, believe it or not, you know, their competitors, right, the offshore competitors that are doing, you know, BetAG Online or whomever, whenever they're advertising, right, and they are, right, advertising, sure, they're not only advertising their sports book, they're also advertising their casino.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these illegal sports books have associated casinos with, right, them that they're driving customers to.
Right.
And I think, you know, the legal sites are at a disadvantage if they don't have that option,
sure, yeah,
as well.
So, you mentioned the illegal sites. I mean, this is a bone of contention for a lot of people here that these illegal sites are still operating, you know, pretty freely in the States. You know, they're able to get payment processing through, you know, in kind of weird ways, but, mm-hmm, they're still able to do it. And they have, and they're being referred to by a lot of the media that, you know, the the lines on Bovada, you know, I mean, come on. You know?
Right.
Do you not know that's an illegal site?
I mean, No. I mean, they get linked backs in, sure, stories, right, like the New York Times.
Right.
And I listen to a number of different sports podcasts, mm-hmm, and the amount of illegal sportsbook, right, advertising that I get through these pod, and these are reputable guys that have shows, sure, on ESPN and on radio, and I'm just like, you guys are taking, it's hard to believe that they're taking this business,
right,
but they,
yeah,
are.
Yeah. I remember when we were running a Casino Player magazine, and all this was before anything was legal in the U.S., and we had people, you know, these offshore sites coming to us and wanting to advertise, and our lawyers said, no, you can't take that advertisement, but, you know, apparently that's not a problem these days.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, and it's you know, I think there needs to be stronger enforcement,
yeah,
right? And I think that's a role that the federal government could play,
right,
is providing some stronger enforcement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I know a lot of people talked about, like, how do we need to repeal the Wire Act, mm-hmm, and do some things. And there's a ton of laws out there right now, federal laws, that should be preventing illegal,
sure,
gambling, right,
right,
of any form.
Yeah.
So using the enforcement tools to do that is good. I think, you know, when you have a very clear white and black market,
mm-hmm,
then it's much easier to enforce against the black market. So,
right,
I think that's even, you know, more important to have, you know, when you have a clear legal market, these are the good guys, and then those are the bad guys.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think another aspect of that is the responsible gaming story. I mean, that's been really up front and center for the last, you know, year or so. You,
mm-hmm,
know, and rightly so, because we really need to be in front of that. I like the conscious gaming group that's started by the,
yep,
GeoComply people,
yep,
so that we can have a self-exclusion list that goes across land-based and online betting,
right,
opportunities.
Yeah, well, I mean, it doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, as we move to kind of this digital e-commerce, you know, if someone has identified themselves as a problem gambler on site X, well, they should be considered a problem gambler on sites XYZ, all of them. So this idea that someone would self-exclude from one site but then be able to go play on another is not a very good responsible gaming function. And so I think what conscious gaming is doing is fantastic.
And even the land-based casinos. I mean, if you self-exclude in New Jersey, you can fly. You can drive to Philly and bet in Philly.
Exactly. Know? Yeah. And the way people are, you know, not only with mobile devices, but you know, when you have highly concentrated areas where there's casinos now, saturation of anywhere people can drive within, you know, a half hour and hit a casino most likely. So yeah, I think it's important to have that exclusion across platforms and across jurisdictions.
Right. And I think, you know, what you mentioned about the, you know, these big podcasts and TV shows accepting ads from illegal casinos, I mean, they should be able to realize that. And also they should be able to support the responsible gaming efforts of the industry, the International Center for Responsible Gaming, the National Center for Problem Gambling. Those centers should be getting support from the big media companies that are trying to capitalize on sports.
Exactly. And I would love to see the industry do a little. I mean, it would be great to have, I mean, the industry donating ad time to those responsible gaming messages.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have six ads in an hour long, you know, show about a sports book, then you got to have two ads in there talking about responsible gaming.
Yeah, that would make a lot of sense. So how long do you think it's going to take iGaming to really, you know, expand beyond the few states it's in right now?
Well, we're in six states now. I think seven now when Connecticut launches.
Mm-hmm.
I think 2022 we'll probably see another two states adopt iGaming. I wish I could tell you which exactly two states those will be, but I predict two states.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think it's really going to be from a 2023 to 25 is where I think you'll see the biggest growth. And it's going to be driven by a number of things. You're going to have, obviously, the industry itself recognizing that they want this and see the value in having this online channel. The pandemic certainly has highlighted the need to have and reach customers in ways other than at your brick and mortar facility. And then I think just, you know, it's an education process.
Sure.
We've been doing an education series over the last several months in Indiana with Indiana lawmakers.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And the questions you get, like they don't understand what iGaming is. The idea that you could even play a casino game on their phone was completely foreign to them. So we've actually physically gone in and set up, you know, computers and showed them this is how you play. This is what it looks like. Live dealer, you know, that has become an extremely popular tool. And Evolution is one of the leaders on that. One of our IDEA members and giving them demonstrations on what Live Dealer looks like, and their minds are completely blown.
Mm-hmm.
They're so it's been eye opening, I think, and hopefully educational. And you know, I think when people get comfortable with it, see how it's being done in a safe, responsible way, then legalization is just really the next step.
Okay, so you mentioned the consolidation that's going on. I mean, it's not slowing down. You know, obviously there can't be as many competitors as we have out there now. There's so many of them. You know, just in New Jersey alone, what's there, 25 or 30 sports books? You know, and for a state with 9 million people, that's not a lot of market share available there.
Right.
So is IDEA doing anything to kind of smooth that over, or trying to you know understand the partners who are involved and maybe putting people together?
Yeah, there is and Jeff's really a great connector of people like that. It's more so his area of expertise than it would be mine. I look focused mostly on the regulatory and legislative side of things, but IDEA has become a great networking tool for companies to understand each other's businesses better and communicate that way. And I think you're right. I mean, although there's a pipeline of companies in Europe who've never touched the U.S. market and are now just looking at it. Where you may see some consolidation, you're going to see newcomers coming up, and what the industry, you know, the top dogs today in 10 years may be a completely different view. It's just the way this industry is changing so quickly and dynamically that I think, you know, I think everyone's trying to stay ahead of, you know, what the next big move is going to be. But I imagine that there's going to be more companies that are going to want to look to get in the, and you know, you have the illegal guys, right?
Sure, right.
You know, I mean, what was it, Five Dimes was one of the big ones.
They tried to make themselves legal.
Trying to make themselves legal. So it'll be interesting to see how that all...
Yeah, I mean, that's a very interesting story in itself. But yeah, I mean, if these, I mean, that's Pinnacle Sportsbook. I mean, people refer to that, but, you know, not legal.
Yeah.
And they could certainly come in and become legal and kind of dominate the market pretty quickly.
Yeah.
They
do that. Yeah.
So it's going to be an interesting time. So how can people find out more about IDEA?
Go to the website, ideagrowth.org. So ideagrowth.org. We have a number of resources on the website where people can learn about who our members are, a lot of the different studies that we've done with respect to cannibalization. Another big issue in our industry is, and most states have figured it out, this idea of remote registration. Nevada yet hasn't figured that out fully, where you have to have in-person registration to sign up for a sports book. Doesn't make a lot of sense when you think about it.
Right. So, and even deposit. You still can't even deposit remotely.
No,
it's crazy.
No, yeah, and hopefully that's changing. I know that there's some efforts underway here to change that. And so you can learn all about the organization there. Anyone can reach out to me directly through the website, and we're happy to answer questions for folks. What we really try to be is a resource, not only to the industry, but, you know, as a forward face for the industry with lawmakers and regulators to ensure that they have all of the, you know, all the information that they need so they can make informed decisions about legalizing and regulating it.
Great. Well, John, thanks for coming by today. I really appreciate seeing you and having
the ability to do this face to face.
Yeah, absolutely. And good luck with IDEA, and I'm sure it's going to become a really important tool for the industry. So thanks for joining us, and the viewers, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Just like a chick in the casino, take your bank before
I pay you out. I promise this, Hope you enjoyed this week's GGB podcast, brought to you by IGT's Peak family of cabinets, performance-driven and player-tested across the board. To learn more, visit igt.com/peak. To understand how the legalization of iGaming will spread across North America, visit ggbmagazine.com. For all the news of the gaming industry delivered to your desktop every Monday morning, sign up for free at ggbnews.com by using the code GGB180. Don't miss any edition of the podcast. Subscribe on iTunes or Spotify today. So we'll see you next time on the GGB podcast. Pop, 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 poker face.